This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, busy show this morning. We're going to get started with Monday Night Football last night. The Steelers beat the Colts 24-17. A game that really doesn't matter for anything other than development of whoever. And that may be Kenny Pickett for the Steelers, for example. And it could also be Jeff Saturday as the head coach of the Indianapolis Colts. And there were certainly some good and there was certainly some bad for both individuals. But that was a Monday Night Football game that doesn't have any bearing on where we're going in the postseason. Both teams with four victories now. They're on the very, very, very miraculous outside looking in sort of level. They're not even in the hunt category of that you would put him in. And that's kind of disappointing for a Monday Night Football game this late in the season. But nevertheless, there's still stuff to dissect from that game. We'll also get into the World Cup match today between the United States and Iran. It is a must-win situation for the United States. They can't tie. They can't tie today. They have to win in order to advance to the knockout stage, which is where a lot of people have projected this team could eventually go. And we'll see if they can actually do that today. So we'll get into that as well. We'll also get into the hiring practices of college football teams around the country, including Auburn, that went with Hugh Freeze. He is now back in the SEC. Now, when we last left Hugh Freeze, he was resigning from Ole Miss because he was using his phone, university phone, to call escort services. But he bounced back nicely, landing at Liberty, where he had been. If you didn't remember that he was at Liberty, you probably should, because he did a really, really good job at that school. And now he's back in the SEC. He's going to be taking over the Auburn program. It is rich with resources. And I think the one thing about Hugh Freeze that you got to remember is that when he was at Ole Miss, he had Ole Miss in the top 10, but he also beat Nick Saban in Alabama in back-to-back years. He does know how to recruit. He does bring in some baggage. But in the end, it is a hire of a familiar name to people within the SEC. Remember, Auburn tried the Brian Harsin route. They tried to go with a guy from the outside coming in to the SEC to see if he could do something. You know, like Kirby Smart's been successful. He's on the Nick Saban tree. But, you know, Tennessee did very well bringing in Josh Heupel from UCF. Ole Miss, when Hugh Freeze was there, was a good school, a good football program. And now this is, again, a familiar name in Auburn. So we'll talk about that. Plus the baggage that he brings with the program, because it wasn't just the escort service situation at Ole Miss. But we'll get to Monday Night Football and development of Kenny Pickett when we come back.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
For joining us on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's, if you'd like to reach us out on Twitter. Monday Night Football last night, as I said at the top of the hour, it wasn't a game that had any impact on the way we're viewing the playoff race as we head down to the final few weeks of the season now, as both the Steelers and the Colts. I mean, the Colts, I mean, I hate to say this, but you never know, right? We always have to kind of put that caveat, even at this point in the season. You never know, but the reality of it is if the Colts had won that game, that would have been a 5-win team. You kind of can do the math a little bit. So maybe it wasn't completely out of the realm of possibility. The Steelers were cooked. They weren't going to go. But maybe the Colts could have wiggled their way through some miraculous close of the season. But now that's kind of done. Both teams now, Steelers are 4-4-7. The Colts 4-7-1 as the Steelers win 24-17. But this is a game about development. This is a game about progress and seeing and making your own personal evaluations outside of the fact that for a guy like me that's roots for the Steelers or somebody else who roots for the Colts, you just want to see your team win. But for the Steelers, this year has always been about Kenny Pickett and the development of Kenny Pickett as a rookie quarterback. And it goes back to that age-old question, which is being brought up again. And it's all Monday morning quarterbacking, no pun intended, when it comes to stories like how a rookie quarterback does, especially if you have a rookie that you did not start right away. As a matter of fact, the Steelers not only didn't start Kenny Pickett right away, they began training camp with him as the third quarterback on the depth chart, right behind Mitch Trubisky and Mason Rudolph. And so Kenny Pickett didn't arrive at the Steelers complex, and he didn't have to go far because the Pitt Panthers, the team he played for in college, and the Steelers share they share the stadium. So he's very familiar with everything, and he's very familiar with the Steelers organization, as well as not only, you know, the entire stadium facility. So, but when he switched over and went over to the Steelers, he wasn't QB1. He wasn't the main guy. He wasn't going to be the focus of every single offensive coach in dealing with a rookie quarterback. But again, I using that term Monday morning quarterbacking is apropos in this situation, because not every team is built or wants to be built going into the season with a rookie QB learning on the fly, right? A lot of times you see coaches do this where they say, look, I just need a veteran guy around, and I don't care who that is. Get me a journeyman quarterback. I don't need him to be a Pro Bowler. I don't need him to be a guy that is going to lead us to a Super Bowl. We're not going after a big, you know, $40 million QB in free agency, because those don't exist. I just need a guy that's been in this league, that knows the routine of this league, and then I'm going to work my rookie in. That's the path the Steelers chose. So the Steelers chose the path of Mitchell Trubisky will be the starter until Kenny Pickett starts. Now, I was under the impression that the Steelers would really, really use Mitch Trubisky all through the season as much as they possibly can. He was going to play well enough that you would develop Kenny Pickett slowly. But that didn't happen. They jumped Kenny Pickett right in. Now, for me, I was glad. As a fan, I was glad. As an analyst and a talk show host, I could see both arguments, but I was really hoping the Steelers would start him immediately. I thought the organization was smart enough that they could put him in a position to play and learn the ropes and get all the rust out. Last night is a perfect example of what you need to do sometimes with a quarterback, and that is develop him as quickly as possible. Kenny Pickett was good last night. He wasn't great, but he wasn't terrible. And the one thing that he's doing over the last couple of weeks is he doesn't turn the ball over. And he didn't turn the ball over last night. Now, he had turned the ball over a ton at the beginning of the season, a ton. But he's now playing smart football. He's throwing the ball away when he has to. He's making plays with his feet. He's not forcing bad throws that get picked off. He's actually playing very, very smart as he gets more comfortable with the guys around him. And you saw it. You could see this sort of relationship that he has with George Pickens, his wide receiver. They seem to get each other. Now, unfortunately, it's the 12th week of the NFL season. So it hasn't developed into a winning season, or at least a competitive season, where the Steelers could find themselves maybe not with an awesome record, but a good enough record to see if the last few games have any value to them. They're not going to the playoffs, and likely they're going to have a losing season. But he is developing. Now, the question always becomes what happens in year two and three when teams, you know, and they figure you out a little bit and there's more tape on you and all that other stuff. And that comes later. But there's a development here that you are seeing with the Steelers that makes me think that maybe, just maybe, it should have started way ahead of time, right at the beginning of the season. I know we had a promo that aired on this station once because I made a comment that in the movie When Harry Met Sally, when Harry finally says to Sally, when you meet somebody you want to spend the rest of your life with, you want the rest of your life to start right away. That is the way I always felt with this guy. If this is your number, you haven't drafted a quarterback number one since Roethlisberger. It's not a thing you do within the organization. You haven't done it. You didn't draft Dan Marino when you had the chance. You drafted Gabe Rivera, right, out of Texas Tech to play defense. The Steelers, they drafted Kenny Pickett. He should have been the guy all along. This should have been a season where you saw the confidence, you saw this kid for his raw talent, and it should have been him from day one. Maybe the season would have been a little bit different. If you're going to lose games with Mitch Trubisky, you might as well lose games with Kenny Pickett. Right? I mean, that's the way I felt. Now, on the flip side, there's development of the Indianapolis Colts. I don't think Jim Irsay wants Jeff Saturday to close out the season and then they'll find another coach. I think Jim Irsay would love Jeff Saturday to be the new head coach of the Indianapolis Colts full-time, permanently, not on an interim basis. Because on an interim basis, he would have made Gus Bradley the head coach, right? Or he would have made John Fox the head coach. Two guys that are on the staff that have been head coaches before. But no, he reached out to Jeff Saturday, got him off television, and got him out of the consulting role, whatever that was he had for the Colts, and to be the head coach of this football team. And now he is 1-2. And last night was there was a glaring example of maybe he needs a little bit more experience of this before we jump up and down at some of the things Jeff Saturday has done to this team. He managed the clock terribly in that final drive. There's no defense about it, even though he gave a defense forward at the end. They needed a touchdown to tie the game in the final minutes. And unfortunately, they had three timeouts that didn't get used. So the Colts were trailing by 7 points. They had a fourth down at the 37-yard line of the Steelers. It was just at the two-minute warning. They convert that fourth down, but then Matt Ryan takes a sack. Then the second down happens with 59 seconds remaining. They don't call a timeout to set up after the sack. They use a very, very slow walk to the line. They snap the ball late on the play clock. They give the ball to Jonathan Taylor on 3rd and 3, nothing. And with 30 seconds left, they're calling their fourth down play. They need a touchdown. They need all the time they can in case certain circumstances happen, an incomplete pass here, a run here, whatever. Now, at the end, he didn't say, we botched that. He said, I didn't feel like we needed to call timeout. I don't know what game he was watching, but I felt like he needed to call timeout. These are things you're seeing in a Monday Night Football game where two individuals are developing on the fly. A rookie quarterback for Pittsburgh and a head coach of the Indianapolis Colts. Saturday blew everybody away with his win against the Raiders. But since then, now he's lost two games since the firing of Frank Reich. And I did not think that last drive, I still think the Steelers would have held. But that second half, the Colts played a lot differently than they played in the first half. The first half, they were miserable, terrible, terrible. But they came out on fire in the second half. They scored two touchdowns in the third quarter and took the lead of a game in which they were trailing 16-3. So Jeff Saturday needs to develop a little bit more. Kenny Pickett is developing a little more. And that's the takeaway from Monday Night Football. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that is Ron with two N's. Bonte Hill is going to join us later on in the show today, this morning, from 95.7 The Game. We're going to talk San Francisco 49ers. They've got a defense that could get that team to the Super Bowl. We're also going to have top five, bottom five coming up this morning as well. And then we're going to talk college football with Patrick Stevens, as the committee is going to have its rankings later on tonight. All right, we'll continue. It is Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. Again, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. All right, so the College Football Playoff Committee will meet tonight, and they're going to give you, I think, another easy four. It just seems like it's going to be really not debatable. It's going to be Georgia number one, Michigan number two. I think Michigan should be number one. If I was on the committee, I'd put Michigan number one. But they'll probably go with Georgia. Georgia will be one, Michigan will be two. Then you will have TCU at three, and then you'll have USC, the USC Trojans at four. And then the real battle will be on where they fit, where they like an Alabama two-loss team, where they like Tennessee and all these other teams that are hovering on the outside for a level ball. Ohio State should be five. And then after that, it's going to be where you see a two-loss Clemson. Where do you see a two-loss Alabama? Not because of the playoff, but because of where they could be going for bowls, like the bigger non-playoff bowl games. And we'll see. Then, of course, they've got Championship Saturday, and it's going to be that's where they're going to be the final one. I tell you right now, I feel bad for USC in a way. I think that this thing is set up in such a way that I'm not a fan of. And I really don't like the idea that USC now with they're 11-1, they're going to play Utah in the Pac-12 championship. And if they are the fourth team, let's say their 11-1 is better than Ohio State's 11-1. That's the question, right? Because if they could come back this week and say, well, we you know what? It's a snapshot of what we've seen so far, not anything that we're projecting. And we like Ohio State, even though they have one loss. We like Ohio State's one loss to USC's one loss. Okay, that's legit. USC's playing really good. Caleb Williams is probably going to win the Heisman, but whatever. They could do that. But if they don't, if they come out and say USC is the number four team, we go back to that scenario where USC has to play this one extra game that Ohio State doesn't have to play, or Alabama doesn't have to play, or these, like we saw in the past. And it does rub people the wrong way, because that's a 13th game. And it's always a really good game, right? It's your championship game. And now you may not be getting a quality opponent that's in the top 10, right, because of divisions or however it works in your conference. But you're getting a opponent that is vying for a championship as you are vying for a championship. So tonight is one of those scenarios where if USC is the fourth team, they could lose that fourth spot if they lose to Utah, and that could happen. Right? That could happen. Utah's a very good football team. And I feel bad for USC, because if they didn't have this game and they were the fourth seed coming in, what makes us think they wouldn't be the fourth seed coming out of when it's all said and done on the third? But that's the way the cookie crumbles, I guess. So Ohio State could still get themselves into this, even though they're not playing for the Big Ten title. And no, Alabama doesn't have a chance. No, they don't. Sorry. As much as you'd like to point to some of the things that they did, they don't. They don't. But brand does matter. Speaking of brand, the Auburn Tigers are set to hire Hugh Freeze to be their new head coach. He replaces Brian Harsin, who was replaced on an interim basis by Cadillac Williams. Cadillac Williams, the former great running back for Auburn, was 2-2 and did bring a lot of energy. A lot of people thought he could get the job, but in the end, they're bringing Hugh Freeze back to the SEC, where he was once the head coach at Ole Miss and did a really good job at Ole Miss. But before the 2017 season, he resigned because they found out that he was using his university phone to call escort services.
I thought he was never going to coach a Division I program again.
Right.
Or a Power 5 program again.
Exactly.
Wasn't that what everyone said?
Of course, because that's what they do, right? Everybody loses their mind, and they go crazy, and they're like, oh, well, he's guiding young people, and look what he's doing.
Yep.
He goes off to Liberty, right, which is a religious institution, by the way. And he goes, they hire him there for 4 years. He does great stuff there. He did get blown out in the season finale, but nevertheless, he had Liberty in the top 25 at one point.
I think he got blown out because he already knew.
He probably was like mentally checked out.
He's like,
I'm going out back to the SEC.
It's going to be so much easier to recruit.
And he lands at Auburn, and Auburn is a great school for coaches. It's got a lot of good resources, and it's got a lot of great support. And it's in the state of Alabama, and you play Alabama, and you're in one of the biggest rivalry games in college football. It is a very, very attractive job. You can get recruits there, you can get people to play there, and you can be a force there. They've won national championships. They have played for a national championship, losing to Florida State. That's all within a relative short period of time when you look at the vastness of college football. But it is also back in the SEC West, where it's going to be tough. It is going to be difficult, but nevertheless, Hugh Freeze has this level of experience. So it does go back to the question about, can people get second chances? They always seem to get second chances in this sport. It is about coaching. Nobody is arguing. This is the thing. If you go to articles on this and you go to the comment section, feels like the fan base is split 50-50. There are people who are excited because, again, he is a good recruiter and he is a good football coach. Those things can be separate from the lack of morals that he displayed when he was at Ole Miss. And by the way, Ole Miss was also under investigation for some academic stuff as well. But you can say, well, I didn't like this and this about him from those traits, but he is a hell of a recruiter and he's a hell of a coach. He's beaten Nick Saban back-to-back years when he was at Ole Miss. That's a pretty big accomplishment in the SEC. Not a lot of coaches can say that have gone up against Nick Saban year in and year out. But it feels like there is the side that says, you know what, the guy did his penance. He was out of the big-time college football programs for a while. He went and did 4 years at Liberty. He didn't do 2 minutes at Liberty. He didn't go there for a second and just be there like, well, I need a paycheck, so let me get at Liberty for about a year, and then I'll get back up and running. No, he was there for 4 years. That's a good chunk of time. I give Lane Kiffin a lot of credit. He was at Florida Atlantic longer than I thought he was going to be. sometimes you do need to sort of disappear. I wonder how many people remember that Hugh Freeze was even at Liberty. Liberty is an independent. They don't play in a conference. But they were ranked in the top 25, and when they would be in the top 25, like 22nd or 23rd, people would go, ah, look what Hugh Freeze is doing over there. And it was only going to be a matter of time. When you start doing that kind of thing at a school like that, when people are going to start knocking on your door again. And sure enough, Auburn was knocking on the door again. And there are reports that he is keeping Cadillac Williams on staff, which I think is great. I, like a lot of other people, was very impressed with what Cadillac Williams did at Auburn, taking over for Brian Harsin. The team looked like a complete mess. He got them fired up, energized. They went 2-2. They ran the ball great against Alabama. They were not on the level of Alabama in the Iron Bowl, but they ran the ball great against that Crimson Tide defense. And I'm glad he was able to stay on staff. I think a coaching job is in Cadillac Williams' future. I'm like many people who have repeated that based on his four-game performance as an interim coach with his alma mater.
Yeah, so. I mean that game, the Iron Bowl, so a lot of reports afterwards were like, Nick Saban, Alabama, blew out Auburn. I was like, I don't really think it was a blowout.
Yeah, it was not a dominating performance by Alabama. Yeah, they won, scoreboard-wise, yes.
Score looks like it, but game-wise, no.
No, they looked sloppy at times. And again, they gave up a lot of yards on the ground. And so, sometimes scores give you an interesting indication. You're like, oh, yeah, there's some circumstances in the game that you gotta watch out for. Because, again, I liked what he did at Auburn. But, again, they're reaching out to somebody who can jump in right away and knows exactly the territory he is in. Right, Hugh Freeze knows the recruiting trails. He knows what it takes to win in the at the SEC West, especially, and he knows how to be in that conference. I said this at the top of the hour. Auburn tried it with Brian Harsin. They tried it. They went the whole let's get somebody outside of this conference who's doing well somewhere else and bring them in. Josh Heupel worked out for Tennessee. And Urban Meyer worked out at Florida, but sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes you bring in somebody and they got to get their sea legs in the conference. Sometimes you feel like you have to pluck the coach from the tree of like a Nick Saban or a Kirby Smart or somebody like that. They are the ones, they get it. They're in the belly of the beast. And they tried it with Brian Harsin. It didn't work out. They bring back a guy that was familiar with the fires of the SEC, dealing with a fan base that is itching to be back on top again. And Hugh Freeze is the name. Do I like the hire? I guess. I mean, to me, yeah, it was an absolutely dumb thing to do, to use a university phone to call escort services. Like, you have your own phone. Like, what are you doing using a company phone? And some of the academic stuff was, but that's, to me, I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it. I want to be all moralistic, but I know that's it's an argument that just falls on deaf ears. It's a sport that is beyond that. We talk about Art Briles, and that's a person I think I would stand on a big box and scream to high heavens, how dare you bring Art Briles back into the fold? I think what Art Briles did at Baylor was despicable. Can I forgive a guy that called an escort service with his phone? It's none of my business, right?
Was it football related?
Was it? Yeah. Well, I mean, did he hurt a kid? Did he hurt a recruit? Did he do something where he
did he cover something up?
Did he cover up something that hurt women on campus? No. Between him and his marriage and his wife with that escort service thing, it's none of my business.
I mean, the only thing I think would be egregious would be if he was calling the escort system or escort, I don't even know what they're called.
Services?
Services, thank you. For recruiting purposes.
Right. Sure, exactly.
That would be, okay, that would be a tough one to,
hey,
tough
hang
one
out
to get
here,
past.
17-year-old. I got exactly. Somebody visiting your hotel room. Yeah, if that was the case, I'd be on the soapbox screaming, but... Listen, people make mistakes.
Yeah, he's doing it for himself.
It's none of my business.
Yeah, it's not my cup of tea.
So, and he did do a good job at Liberty, and I'll take Liberty's word for it that he was fine for them. He's fine for Auburn, and I think he's going to do some good things at Auburn. All right, we'll talk about the United States-Iran match coming up next on Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now. on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, again on Twitter at Tony D Radio at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. All right, so again, Monday Night Football last night, not a game for the playoff hunt race that they were, you know, that usually get this time. You try to book these NFL games. You think they might be interesting, but sometimes they're not. And sometimes you get a dud. These were two teams where it was more about, hey, how's Jeff Saturday doing? How's Kenny Pickett doing? And that's pretty much it. The United States at the World Cup in Qatar today will take on Iran. They need to win to get to the knockout stage. They cannot tie, and they definitely cannot lose. They have to win. A lot of pressure on the young team, but I saw a report in the New York Post today, but there's a lot of pressure on the Iran team. Apparently, they are vocally supporting the protests that are going on in Iran. There was a young woman that was arrested in that country for not wearing her hijab. Is that how you pronounce it?
I think it's hijab.
Hijab?
I think so. Correctly? I don't know.
She was arrested and beaten. Yeah. And there's been protests in that country. And the team has stood in solidarity with the protesters of that country. And they have been vocal about it. And now there's a report that the government is threatening the players with and their families with imprisonment and torture. The politics can't get itself out of this thing, can it?
No.
I mean, every 4 years, I feel like there's a political angle. Greg Burkhalter was asked about things he had no idea yeah. about at the press conference.
U.S.
About
naval warship in the Persian Gulf.
He's like, I'm a soccer coach. The politics, the world politics can never, we always talk about this event and the Olympics as the world coming together in solidarity for athletic competition, but that's not the case at all. It never
is. No,
and
especially in this one too, because, you know, I mean, lots of silent protests were wanting to be made, or, you know, just unification against discrimination was wanting to be made.
Sure.
You know, because Qatar, because, you know, one of the country's laws there is homosexuality is against the law.
Yeah.
So a lot of guys were wanting to, you know, have a silent protest, say, you know, we stand with you guys who are here and have to hide, you know, by wearing rainbow armbands. And FIFA steps in and goes, oh, no, you can't do that.
I still don't understand why FIFA is kowtowing to Qatar. The money's already been paid.
It's beyond me.
Right, you don't owe Qatar anything. You're never going back there within the next 50 years.
Iran decided to protest this game against the U.S. or actually wants the U.S. to be kicked out of the World Cup ahead of the game because the U.S. is not recognizing their official flag right now.
Yeah, much easier to get to the knockout stage when you've disqualified
right.
your opponent for the match that you have to play. So I understand.
But it's kind of funny is because I mean, you know, the official flag for Iran right now, there's a Islamic State symbol in the middle,
right?
And they just don't have that on their uniform. They removed it because they don't, you know, that's their way they're protesting. So Iran went to the ethics committee of FIFA.
It's crazy. I mean,
which
it's
I thought was
crazy.
An oxymoron, ethics committee. I was like, they have one.
it's I don't know, man. I don't know. It's amazing to watch that press conference and see the clips of that press conference and to be like, this is what we're doing now. We're doing this.
Yeah. Now, Tyler Adams was asked a question. I thought he handled it brilliantly.
Well, he was asking about discrimination.
Yeah.
How could you support a country that discriminates? Says, I've lived all over the world. It happens everywhere. We're progressing as a country, but
I thought he answered it perfectly.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, you can't fault anything he just said. But, I mean, and all these questions were coming from a Iranian reporter, too.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, which probably got directive to try to embarrass the United States in some way or try to use the stage of the World Cup to bring up something that is not being talked about on a world global stage. But if you bring it up at a press conference at the World Cup, it probably will be, right? It'll probably be shown. So they're using the venue to bring up a ship in the Persian Gulf, discrimination in the United States, the culture of the United States, all those things. They're utilizing that. But as far as the match tonight, this afternoon, I should say, as far as the match this afternoon, do you, as a guy who as follows this closer than me, are you more nervous about the youth of this team in a must-win situation, or are you excited about sometimes youth, they don't know any better, so they just go out and play?
I'd be lying to you if I said I wasn't nervous.
I'm kind of nervous, too.
I'm nervous just because it feels it is the youth. part. Now, I feel that this team knows how to win. If they come out and they play the way they did against England, they'll win this game. Without a doubt in my mind, they'll win this game.
Now, see, as somebody who says, hey, Ron, I don't really follow like any of the friendlies or the Confica stuff. I don't follow any of that. So I don't know what you're talking about because I haven't seen them win at all.
Right.
Yeah, like, I saw them lead 1-0.
Yeah.
And then they gave up a penalty kick. And then I saw them not score in the second game.
Listen, they've had to do a lot of winning to get to this point. So they know how to win. And that's why I said, if they can come out and play the way they did against England. England's the top five team in the world.
Yeah.
And England's one of the favorites to move on and win the World Cup. And England's going to advance. It would be mind-blowing. So, I mean, the craziest things would have to happen for them not to advance to the knockout stage.
But what did you take out of that match for the novice out there? What did you take out? Because...
It was the way they were pressuring England the entire time.
England didn't win. Like, England didn't score, right? Like, England's a very talented team, and they didn't score. And I've seen a number of these matches where I'm like, why Brazil. I was watching the Brazil match yesterday, and I'm like, why is it taking Brazil this long to win? Isn't Brazil one of the best teams in the world? Sometimes goals just don't come.
Exactly, and like, that was what we
saw. They just don't come.
And that's what we saw in the USA-England match. England, or USA, had a lot more scoring opportunities. And a lot better scoring opportunities. Their defense locked it down on England. They, you know, England was able to create some chances, but they never really got a clear look. Not as much as the U.S. I mean, we were inches away from this being a 1-0 win for the U.S. when Christian Pulisic hit the crossbar. I mean, just a few inches lower, he's roofing that ball.
Yeah.
And you know, we're up 1-0 and the country's in pandemonium. That's what I'm taking away from it. The first half against Wales, the entire game against England, that's the way they need to come out. If they come out flat like they did in that second half against Wales where they were up 1-0 and it almost like they settled down and were willing to just play defense – they will lose to Iran. Iran is quick enough and smart enough to make something happen out of nothing that will just destroy you.
My biggest worry is the tie. That's my biggest worry. It's not losing. I don't think they'll lose to this team. But my biggest worry is the tie, where you just play and you go, well, we tried, but, you know, couldn't get the quality shot we needed on net. And yeah, next thing you know, it's 1-1 or it's 0-0, and you're like, we're going home.
See, I think this game, I'm confident that this game will be 1-0 or 2-0. When I say that, I mean, you know, if they are able to get a second goal, I think that second goal comes very late, and it's literally like on a fast break.
I know that there's millions of soccer fans in this country, that will watch the World Cup all the way through the end. I get that. But the advertising that is currently on, I don't want that to end.
Of course.
You know what I mean? Like when I see Peyton Manning and David Beckham, I know they're not doing a Team USA ad, but the ad is to get this country into watching the World Cup, right? But of course it's better when our country is in it. The ratings are much better when our country is in it. I kind of want the party to continue. I don't want it to end. And with 3 ties, like, I want it to continue. So I'm really hoping you're right. I'm hoping you're right.
No, and you want it to continue. I mean, even if they get to the knockout stage and say, you know, I mean, their habit is losing in the round of 16.
I would be all right with that.
We're all right with that. It's you know, and, you know, and it'll probably still, people will still watch.
Yeah.
You know, because now it's the knockout stage, but you had a team that was in the knockout stage, so now you're like, oh, I'm kind of invested in this. I want to see what happens. I think if USA loses today or draws today, you know, just doesn't qualify for the next round, most of America will probably tune out Wednesday, Thursday, Friday this week. You know, I mean, just not even care about the fact that, you know, hey, there's other games that are going on. There's other critical decisions that are going to be made, critical points that still need to be made to be gained. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's a lot of fun storylines. Germany may not qualify for the knockout stage.
It's such a tough sell when your country's not in it. That's the
right. I mean, the soccer player, to the people who are just fans of soccer, they're going to watch all the way through. We can't get enough of this.
The conundrum of sports broadcasting, which is, it goes back to Sparky Anderson said about baseball. You win 54, you lose 54. It's what you do in the other 54 that matter the most, right? Every team is going to have that. It's the same thing in a sports broadcast. You've already got your audience. They're never going away.
Yeah.
Then you've got the people that will never watch no matter what you do. You could pay them and they're not watching. Those people you could count. It's that middle of the road people that are like, I could watch if it's enticing to me, if I have a personal interest in it, if there is something that makes me go, yeah, all right, I'll settle in and watch. That's the group you're looking for. That's the group you're grabbing. And I do think you're right. I think that as this country has grown and with MLS and more cities with MLS and more kids playing the sport and whatnot, I think you're seeing that number grow incredibly. And I think that's probably the most important metric of it. I agree with you. I remember in 2010, because I was with a startup radio station, and we had a launch party, and we were in Denver. And we were launching the station, and we had, like, our banners were up and up. All the hosts were there, and we were getting ready to launch, like, on the Tuesday of the next week. But it happened to be on the weekend of the World Cup Finals. And the bar that we were at doing the remote, we chose it because of the World Cup Final, and it was packed.
Yeah.
It was packed. And of course, it had nothing to do with the United States. The United States had long been gone. It was the year Germany won, where that young kid scored the goal that won it. I forget who they played, but they won. I think Spain. I think I'm playing Spain.
Yeah.
And
Spain won that game.
Was Spain won that game?
Spain won in 2010.
Oh, they did? Okay.
So yeah, Germany won in 2014.
Okay. So 2000 and so what Spain won. It was thrilling. It was really exciting.
Yeah, no.
It was like we were there and we were doing our bits and we were doing our launch party, but we were doing it in front of a captive audience, and there was a lot of people there. There were a lot of people in that bar watching that World Cup match.
I fully believe the World Cup final will draw people no matter what. You know, I think people will tune in and, you know, because they love the championship moment. But I think it's, you know, the round of 16, the quarterfinals, semifinals, that's where you'll probably find a lot of drop-off
right.
if the U.S. doesn't qualify.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, that, and, you know, especially the rest of this week with, you know, a lot of really tight races and tight games. But I think the World Cup final, everyone will come back around to it and be like, oh, you know, nothing else is on, you know, this Saturday afternoon. Because I think it's December 18th. So
and I think there's a lot of people who just like sports in general just go, look.
Yeah, it's a finale.
It's the finale. It's the biggest event in the world right now. Mm-hmm. Like, I'll might as well watch it and see what this is about.
Yeah. So, I don't know if you'll have watch parties.
No, but at the same time, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
but
I bet I'd go down to my local sports area. I bet there'll be a few people there watching.
Of course.
Maybe not jam packed to the hills, but there'll be a few people.
Yeah, but so. I mean, if the U.S. can qualify, if they can pull out a win today and qualify for the next round, I mean, it'll be you'll still have World Cup fever going.
Ready to pull it off, man. Ready to pull it off. That is this afternoon, 2:00 Eastern time, the United States and Iran in Qatar. We'll come back as we continue with Wake Up Call. Again, we've got Bonte Hill coming up later on in this show this morning. We'll talk San Francisco 49ers, a team I think could go. I think defense alone, they have a defense alone that could get them to the Super Bowl. We continue. It's Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
On Facebook, Mark says, didn't the reporter correct the USA player on pronouncing Iran? It should be Iran. Yeah, I think it is Iran.
Yeah, but we didn't get the memo, so we're calling it Iran.
I've been saying Iran my whole life.
Exactly.
I think it was because growing up, it was like the Iran-Contra scandal with Ollie North. Remember that? Like, that's all I heard. Like, Iran. Yeah. The Iran-Contra scandal.
It's like, you know, it's a kind of a joke. It's like Iran so far away.
Yeah, I've heard Qatar. I've heard Qatar. I don't know how to pronounce it.
I'll say Qatar, Qatar in the same sentence.
I've done that myself.
Because what confuses me is, you know, I think they're called Qatarians, right?
Right.
They're not Qatarians?
They're not Qatarians, yeah. You got to be careful there.
Or Qataris?
Qataris.
Qataris.
So that's why I say Qatar.
Yeah.
Robert on Facebook. Charlie, so glad you're having Bonte on the show. He's always a good interview. We love Bonte Hill,
yes.
But that thing is never going to die.
No.
That Charlie issue is never going to die.
That's so funny.
That was great. And I didn't stop him.
No, the best part about it was our program director sending a copy of that interview to his program director.
Yeah. That was pretty good. That was pretty good.
So, yeah, you know, Bonte had a little bit of issues with our host name.
Yeah.
You know, he had trouble pronouncing Tony.
So, by the way, I saw one of these reports about the World Cup in Qatar, and they were talking about the economics that went into this. They say they estimated, they don't have an official amount, but they're estimating that Qatar spent $300 billion building these stadiums and building a city of state. There was nothing there. And then all of a sudden, they spent $300 billion on hotels, stadiums, whatnot for the World Cup. And they said, in return, they'll get maybe $15 billion out of that for it. And it's why these countries do it. They don't do it to make a profit. They lose money. They get the Olympics. They get the World Cup so that your country is in the spotlight and that it produces all of these little, you know, you want to do business there. You want to go there for your big conference. You want to do business with Qatar, all of that stuff. It's mind-boggling to me when I look at that country and how big it is. And I go, wow, no bigger than Connecticut, and it's hosting the World Cup. Insane. Absolutely insane. All right, we'll continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.